This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
There are credible reports that both sides are massing troops close to this strategic town.
That's the United Nations Human Rights Chief Zaid Raad Al-Hussein talking about the concerns over the Democratic Republic of Congo's election preparations. Details coming up also. Ethiopia's new prime minister has dropped the terrorist designations for three opposition groups. And Kenya's top prosecutor is pursuing manslaughter charges against nine people over a collapse of a dam in May that killed 47 people. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zaid Raad Al-Hussein, warns that numerous violations of human rights by the DRC government against its citizens raise serious doubts about the credibility of the country's long-delayed elections, now scheduled at the end of this year. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where the High Commissioner expressed his misgivings to the UN Human Rights Council this week.
Violent protests have broken out sporadically in Democratic Republic of Congo since President Joseph Kabila failed to give up power when his mandate ended December 2016. Presidential elections are supposed to take place on December 23rd. But UN Rights Chief Zaid Raad Al-Hussein says Congo's government has not implemented the confidence-building measures laid out in a political agreement at the end of 2016. These include the respect of people's rights of freedom of opinion, expression and peaceful assembly, the release of all political prisoners, and holding human rights violators accountable for their actions.
Intimidation of human rights activists and journalists has intensified, with many suffering regular threats to their lives and families. Multiple cases of arbitrary arrests and detention by the security forces continue to be documented by the UN Joint Human Rights Office. Lengthy incommunicado detentions by intelligence services without judicial review are another matter of great concern and should be prohibited.
Zaid is calling for the government to prevent a further erosion of people's rights as the country moves toward landmark elections. He urges the government to fully implement its commitments under the 2016 agreement, including the release of all political prisoners. DRC Minister of Human Rights Marie-Ange Mushabekwa confirms that presidential, national, and local elections will be held on December 23rd. She says the electoral process is underway and is irreversible. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ethiopia's reformist prime minister has dropped the terrorist designations for three opposition groups and dismissed five prison officials linked to alleged torture at a notorious jail. The actions came as the Human Rights Watch group issued a report today on the Ogaden jail facility in the country's eastern Somali region. HRW says it interviewed 70 former inmates, along with 30 government officials and security force members, to document what it called horrific conditions at the prison. Most prisoners were members of the Ogaden National Liberation Front, which was one of the groups removed from the terrorist list. Also dropped were the Oromo Liberation Front and Gunboat 7. Since his election in April, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has taken a number of actions to ease repression and human rights violations in the tightly controlled country. But while many Ethiopians welcome the reforms, there have been troubling signs of anger, including a bombing in Addis Ababa last month at a massive rally moments after Abiy gave a speech. South Africans are being urged to save money this July, which has been dubbed National Savings Month. But with the gasoline prices at an all-time high and knock-on effects on the prices of public transport and food, many locals say saving is just not an option for them. From Johannesburg, Nadia Same has the story.
Several cost of living increases have come into effect in South Africa over the past few months. Citizens have just weathered two hefty fuel price increases. Municipal tariffs are also increasing this month, meaning locals will be paying more for water, electricity and sewerage. Despite the Financial Balancing Act, in most households, people are being told to save, save and save. Gerald Mwandiambira from NGO the SA Savings Institute describes the average South African as someone who doesn't really save.
We're coming from a background where the majority of South Africans had very little and didn't enjoy the luxuries of life. So you have a scenario where the average South African is deep in debt. The average household debt to income in South Africa currently well over 70%. And it's only now that we're getting a bit of a tougher economic cycle that people are putting savings to top of mind.
South African households have one of the poorest saving rates in the world. Last year, an Old Mutual study found that 15% of employed people put money away, and the savings rate of the whole population was at a shocking 3%. Now locals are being urged to review their budgets, cut back on whatever is not essential, and refrain from creating additional debt. But it's not a one-size-fits-all solution, as many parts of the country are under financial pressure. Many rely on government grants and struggle to cover their basic needs, like putting food on the table. Another stumbling block is the so-called black tax, meaning young black people often have to support their parents, grandparents or siblings. Black families still grapple with the apartheid legacy of a lack of family wealth to fall back on. Brian Jacobs is a young professional working in the security sector. He's one of the few who managed to put away for a rainy day.
I try to save on a monthly basis. I've actually got two debit orders going off on my account automatically. And that's what I like about it, because it's smooth. It happens. I just see on a regular basis the money goes off. And the one amount is on a fixed account, so I don't actually have access to it. And then the other one, I can access the money immediately whenever I need it. And I've dipped into it a few times already when I needed it, so it's good to have.
Mwandiambira agrees, saying the key is to start small.
By making a small contribution towards your saving, you're getting into the habit, and often it diminishes the great sacrifice many people think you need to be making. The second thing to help you save is around discipline. Automated saving are a good way of allowing yourself to start saving without knowing you're really doing it. So either setting up a stop order from your bank account or joining a savings group with friends.
Experts say the repercussions of failing to save are dire.
The dangers of not saving early is that you lose out on the power of compounding. But it is quite understandable that young people are not in the mindset to save or even imagine the cost of living 30 or 40 years from now. For the young people, we recommend that they find themselves a mentor or financial planning professional who can help them to plan ahead.
Financial experts' advice to heavily indebted South Africans is to start paying off their smallest debt first. This creates the habit of paying off debt swiftly and frees up cash for the savings kitty. But many South Africans say that the rate of inflation and the frequency of price hikes far outweigh their salary increases. For now, long-term planning may depend on the success of government support for those who need it and improved policies to increase employment and better pay. For VOA Africa, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
Kenya's top prosecutor is pursuing manslaughter charges against nine people over the collapse of a dam that sent a wall of water crashing down on a village in May, killing 47 people. Officials say the private dam was built by unskilled workers with flawed designs and was not able to cope with prolonged heavy rains that inundated Kenya for weeks. Two managers of Patel Coffee Estates, where the dam was located, face charges along with seven government water management and environmental officials. None have commented on the allegations. The dam was used for fish farming and irrigation for coffee, flowers, and macadamia nuts in Kenya's Rift Valley. In Malawi, pregnant mothers and guardians of young children who live in villages far from health facilities are now getting medical help thanks to a toll-free hotline service known as Chapatala Chafoni, or Health Center. Run by the non-profit Village Research, the program connects expectant mothers in rural areas with health workers to receive appropriate care and health services. The two-way text messaging has now been extended to other health topics. This has helped to reduce congestion in public hospitals and also cut the long-distance villagers' travel to hospitals. Lamek Masina talked with country director Carla Blovelt on the impact of project.
So what does this service you are offering trying to achieve? Why did you decide to expand to other health topics in addition to your initial focus on improving maternal health? So despite the success story you are talking about, what are your plans for the future? So this ensures the sustainability of the program. So what challenges do you face?
That was Carla Blovelt, country director for the nonprofit called Village Reach, talking with reporter Lamek Masina. Nineteen past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The World Cup quarterfinals start tomorrow with a pair of South American teams taking on a pair of European countries. Uruguay faces France in the early match Friday, followed by Brazil against Belgium. On Saturday, Sweden takes on England and host Russia. The biggest surprise in the quarterfinals plays Croatia. For more details on World Cup action, be sure to stay tuned to The Sunny Side of Sports. The Zimbabwe Defense Forces say they will be neutral and will not be directly involved in the running of this month's election. The statement has generated mixed feelings in the country. Reporter Kuzai Zanawash has more details from Harare.
Colonel Overson Mukwisi, head of public relations for the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, explained the military's role in the elections.
members of the public should be made aware that the Zimbabwe Defence Forces has no direct role in the upcoming harmonized elections. Our role in the elections is mainly to support the Zimbabwe Republic Police in their role of maintenance of law and order in the country before, during, and after the harmonized elections.
Mugwisi said Wednesday, the Defence Forces remain ready to assist the Electoral Commission with transportation when and where necessary. He rejected reports that the forces were involved in politics and the army had been sent out to rural areas. Political analyst Rashid Mukundu is doubtful about that statement.
I don't think the army is being honest by saying that they will be neutral, because as we heard yesterday, the army failed to respond to the question as to why they participated and in fact managed logistically the ZANU-PF primary elections, deploying helicopters, army personnel and vehicles to participate in the ZANU-PF primary elections.
Although the country's constitution requires the military to be politically neutral, most Zimbabweans think the army has been instrumental in ZANU-PF's long rule. Mukundu says it's impossible for the army to be neutral, given that it forced out President Robert Mugabe last year, ending his 37 years at the head of the nation. The military approved former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa as Mugabe's replacement, and Mnangagwa is ZANU-PF's presidential candidate.
So how on earth are they going to be neutral when one of theirs is Vice President Constantino Chiwenga is a part of the electoral campaign, when one of theirs whom they put in office, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is part of the process? So there's no way that this army is neutral.
Christine Chinoperekwe is a Harare resident. She says she does not believe the statement by the army.
It's just a statement for the media. Otherwise, we all know that they follow the orders that they get from the ruling party.
The military statement came as some opposition supporters have complained that soldiers are working at the Electoral Commission, although the commission has called that accusation unfounded. Zimbabwe holds its election without Mugabe on July 30th. At least 20 candidates are challenging Mnangagwa in the presidential race. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
In Rwanda, some food researchers are criticizing the government's agricultural policy. Their views are included in a report by the Institute of Research and Dialogue for Peace. It says that the government is failing to increase food production, though about 80% of all households depend on agriculture to survive. About 60% of all Rwandans live on less than $1.25 a day. Dr. Eric Ndushabandi is the director of the Kigali-based institute. Reporter Eugene Uimana asked him about the findings of the study.
We worked on the CIP, which is a crop intensification program, which is one of the programs in agriculture, which exists since 14 years now. The purpose was to look at the level for satisfaction of citizens engaged in farming in agriculture, in terms of agriculture productivity and reduce poverty and food insecurity. The agronomists, they need, and the Minister for Agriculture and the Rwanda Agriculture Board, they need to explain more and more the quality of soil, the appropriate crop to be cultivated there. But ordinary citizens are not understanding. So it means, how do we find a way of explaining to ordinary people those very complicated chemical results in terms of the quality of the soil to justify why it is unproductive to put here and there this and that crop? So it's about, once again, information. But doing it regularly, not doing the mapping of the quality of the soil 10 years before and then continuing to impose to people to cultivate this and this when it is not maybe producing.
What is your opinion of Rwandan government policies to improve agriculture and reduce poverty and hunger?
One, it's about to extend this crop intensification program. It's very productive, as I saw it. But by extending, giving the voice to ordinary people and value the local knowledge, do as much as possible as sensitization and education. To increase this kind of education, agriculture skills to ordinary Rwandans, including schools, how do we develop practices of agriculture in primary school then people can develop this need of embracing this discipline of agriculture and professionalize it.
Rwanda is a very crowded country. Is there enough land for everyone?
So it is very small when you go for the demographic issues, density by population, and when you take the variable of the average of members in a household, we found that it's around 6 per household, which leads to the distribution of land to every single child in the family. So when the fathers and the mothers are having in this pressure of everyone in the house having access to the small land, so everyone is having a very small portion of the land.
What types of land reform might increase food production?
We need to know the quality of the soil. The problem is not the size, absolutely. We need to go for focusing on more production in a small space. This is the management. Instead of imposing them to cultivate something which is not producing, so it means you keep people in food insecurity and poverty.
Are there other alternatives for feeding the country? For example, can the government create a vibrant agriculture sector but also boost employment in other sectors like technology?
Agriculture and technology has to go together. Instead of going for selling the potatoes or sorghum outside the country, maybe develop an agro-industry. Then it develops the services and it absorbs the unemployment.
President Paul Kagame has suggested that local leaders need to leave their offices and consult more with the farmers and the rural poor. So is this a problem of poor agriculture policies or poor implementation and the consultation with the poor?
The program showed very clearly that the problem is not about the policies, but the problem comes about the implementation and the conflict of interest of some people, but also some pressure from some individual leaders at local level, maybe to embrace or to meet some deadlines, to meet some expectations or to meet some performance contracts. So he's right, His Excellency, that when you go out as top leader, you will see that, you will know that there is a problem in terms of communication between local leaders and ordinary people.
That was Dr. Eric Ndushabandi of the Institute of Research and Dialogue for Peace in Kigali. He was speaking with reporter Eugene Uimana. That wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wojtek Zorniak, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Interested in deeper analysis of news and events in Africa? Then plan to join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. So plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Sporty greetings to all our VOA listeners. This is Sonny Young, host of The Sunny Side of Sports.
We will rock you.
Please join me at 1630 and 1830 UTC, Monday through Friday, for special World Cup updates during the month-long football festival in Russia. Right here on The Voice of America.